Bigfoot Eruption presents Judy from Lebanon, Oregon. Bigfoot Seer. Good afternoon, Judy. It's me. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, got you fine.
Great. I'm sorry you took a spill recently.
Hey, stuff happens.
First thing I want to say is I hope we can talk again. I know when we're done, I'm going to have questions. I'm going to say, oh, man, I didn't ask that question, and I didn't ask this question.
Okay, so how do you want to roll this out?
Well, it's interesting how we met. but why don't we start with how this all began for you, and what were your feelings on this subject before it happened?
Okay, so are we recording?
Yes.
Okay, well... the first time I encountered something different was I had family that lived in Washington State, and my uncle was a truck driver, and they lived out of White Salmon, and the first thing that happened, us kids were staying in a trailer that they had way out at the back of the property. And I believe that there were six of us, three boys and three girls, all cousins. And we were playing cards inside the trailer, and it was dark outside. And all of a sudden, something started shaking the trailer and growling. And at that point, we'd heard of Bigfoot or Sasquatch, as they preferred to be called.
Oh.
And, but, you know, we figured we'd never see one or hear one. And, it went on for quite a while. It was pounding on the door and you know, making all kinds of noise. And eventually, I'm not sure why, but we all fell asleep, you know, and we were just kind of a pile of kids on the middle of the floor. And we woke up before daylight, and we headed back to the house and woke the parents up. And of course, you know, they didn't believe us. And so that night when my uncle came home from work, his face was white as a sheet when he got there. So the way that you got into the property was a cutout between two hills, and it was red clay. And it was probably 20 feet from one side to the other, and he was driving a logging truck. And out of the corner of his eye, he saw this huge hairy foot and leg step over into the middle of the log truck and go and take another step over to the other side.
Wow.
And yeah, when he got home, I mean, he was shaken like a leaf. And my uncle wasn't known for being extremely honest. You know, he had a reputation for someone else having to call his dog for him.
Huh.
And so, you know, Dad didn't believe him.
What?
So wait a second. So his log truck was parked underneath this great big huge light, and they took a couple ladders and they crawled up on top of the truck. And right in the middle of the cab was this huge footprint. And it couldn't have been anything else. It couldn't have been a rock, because in that area it was all clay. And there were, you know, there were pieces of clay all around it, and it was human shaped. And so they went out the next morning and they found footprints on both sides of the road up in the clay.
Oh boy.
And yeah. And so, you know, Dad didn't say anything. And then the second encounter was Willow Creek, California. We were working in a band at that point, and we were the headliners, and we got into town the night before and checked into the hotel. And the next morning, we were to meet the owner of the logging company, because he was our sponsor. And so we met him at the Little Bigfoot Cafe there in Willow Creek. And we hadn't been there for very long. And his two sons came storming into the restaurant, and they were both scared to death and really excited. And they came in and reported that when they got up to the logging camp, everything had been destroyed. They'd had trouble before that, you know, things coming in and tearing apart their lunch boxes and, you know, pushing pickups around and stuff like that, but it was never anything serious. Well, today was something different. When they got up there, they had a D9 cat, and it was turned over on the cage, and something huge had got up onto the treads and stomped the cage flat. And they had a big loader, and it had taken the arm off the loader and beat the rest of the loader to death with it. And that was just a little bit of the damage. I mean, pickups were shoved over the edge of the canyon, and I mean, they destroyed everything. And my dad wanted to go up and see it, but they wouldn't let him, because of course he was their star, and they wanted to protect him. And then years and years went by, and now I'm married and I have a family, and I live in the foothills of the Cascades. And so I've always believed in Sasquatch, but I always thought he was a North American great ape, like so many people do. But now I know different. So my husband and I are hunters, and the first encounter here has been, it was about 6 years ago, and we were hunting up above Sweet Home, and they had been logging, and the area still had burn piles, and they were smoking. And so I was dogging the area, and I got about three quarters of the way around it, and I heard a wood knock, and it couldn't have been anything else. But being a logical person, my brain started ticking, and I'm looking at the way that the smoke's going up in the sky, and there was absolutely no wind. The smoke was going straight up, and you know, and there wasn't anything else it could have been. And so when I got it back to the pickup, I didn't say anything to my husband. And so we hunted for a little while longer. And when we went home, I told him, you know, while we were up there by the burn, I heard a wood knock. And he looked at me and he said, why didn't you say anything? Mm. And I said, well, I had to process it. Now, if you want me to stop at any point, let me know, Albert.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So the next thing that happened, and this was 2 years ago, And this was the pivotal moment in how I looked at Sasquatch. We were, again, up above Sweet Home, and so much of that area is gated off, and it's hard to find a place to hunt. But we found this area where we could park our pickup, and we had our choice of going to the left or the right. And the right was, we chose the right because my husband wears a prosthesis, and it was easier for him to walk across. It was flat. And so we were walking under alder trees, and so we had some light filtering in. And we came to a corner, and when I'm out hunting, I'm looking at the ground, looking for sign, looking for prints, and there were a lot of them. But we'd come up to this place where there was an 8x6 scorched area. There was nothing else around it that showed signs of being burnt, just that 6 foot by 8 foot rectangle. And Neil looks at me and he goes, well, do we keep going? And there was a corner in front of us, and I, you know, I wasn't feeling uncomfortable. So we walked around the corner, and we were at the edge of the fir trees, and it looked for all the world like something huge had taken those branches and created a tunnel out of the fir branches. And it must have been 10 feet tall, and it was completely dark on the inside. And my spidey senses started tingling. And Neil looked at me and he said, well, do we keep going? And before I could answer him, I heard this very deep voice in my head. And it said, you can't go in there. Now, I'm a Christian, and my gifting is that of discernment, which means that I'm close with the Holy Spirit. I've heard his voice many times. Well, this voice that I heard was not the Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. And so I looked at Neil, and I said, did you hear that? And he said, did I hear what? And I said, did you hear that voice? And he said, no. And I said, well, according to that voice, we're not supposed to go in there. And so we turned around and we came home. And that was the day before the last day of hunting season. So we, on the way home, we talked about it, and we decided that we would go out the next morning and take the left fork. And about 2 o'clock in the morning, I heard the voice again. And it said very loudly, you're not supposed to go. And I said, okay. And I went back to sleep. And when the alarm went off at 4 o'clock in the morning, and my husband started getting up, I said, where are you going? And he goes, we're going hunting. And I said, no. And then I told him about the voice. Well, you know, I had no idea what was going on. And I listened to a podcast by David Nino Rodriguez, and he's out of Texas. And he had this man on whose name is Steve Isdall. Steve Isdall is many things. He's a world-class hunting and fishing guide who lives in British Columbia, but he also is an experiencer of Sasquatch, and he's had a podcast for years. Originally, it was all about the hunting and fishing, but as he had experiences with these beings, he's had to set up a new one, and it's called The Facts by How to Hunt. So Neil and I started listening. And boy, did I learn a lesson. These aren't animals. They're 97% human. They have a language. They have emotions. They have tribes. They lived with the Native Americans before the white men came. So, and this is the important part. They're telepathic. And that's the voice that I heard.
Okay, stop there. I think we're about to meet your friend. So let's review. Thank you for telling me that they prefer Sasquatch. That makes so much sense. And now you're saying they have a tribe connection and therefore have some knowledge that Sasquatch was an approved Indian name for these beings.
Yes.
Also, you mentioned Willow Creek. How was it to visit Willow Creek at that time? I was there about 5 years ago. Still a Bigfoot capital.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, back then, I was about 17, and I was a little bit boy crazy. And what grabbed my attention wasn't the Sasquatch.
Oh.
It was the two good-looking guys that came to warn us.
Well, hopefully you took a lot of pictures.
Oh, we did.
Okay, then looking back at those pictures, maybe there were some Bigfoot murals, Bigfoot statues.
Oh, they're everywhere down there.
By the way, did you stay at the Bigfoot Motel?
Yes, we did.
Great.
Yeah, it was. It's an interesting place, and if you're interested in Sasquatch, I would recommend going down there. To this day, there are tons of sightings. So, yeah, it's a place if you want to go squatching.
Great. Later, you mentioned going hunting and hearing wood knocks. Had you heard of wood knocks before that happened?
I'd heard of them, but I'd never heard one.
I experienced wood knocks once, and it was a feeling like, oh yeah, that could be nothing else.
Yeah.
Were the wood knocks like communication one to another, or maybe a message to you?
I think it was a message to me. I think it was a warning to get out of there.
And then they had to get in your head. They really wanted to protect you.
Yes. Yes. So, this is how that happened. So my husband and I have family in Redmond, and we go once a month to see them. And so that morning, as we were on our way, we were taking Highway 20. And at the point where that was adjacent to where I had heard the voice, I reached out and I said, "I know what you did. Thank you. You probably saved my life." And all of a sudden, I felt this huge, hairy set of arms wrap themselves around me. And I heard his voice say, "You're welcome. My name is Tinker." And, you know, some people say that they're evil. I don't agree with that, because the only thing I have ever felt from them is just this sheer incredible sense of love.
So,
and
the one that destroyed the equipment years earlier, that's a topic someday we could discuss. Some people think they're evil, some think they're loving. Is it just that some are having a bad day, or there's an agenda by a darker force for some of them? And I admit that's a conversation for another day, probably. So,
well, if you want my opinion on that, Albert, it's very simple. In many ways, they're just like humans. And, you know, 90% of humanity is awesome. Then you have the other 10% or 20% or whatever that aren't. And it's a choice that they make, or it's from things that have happened to them, experiences that have been negative. And I think that plays into who or what they are.
Would you say that belonging to a clan keeps them more stable, where the rogue ones don't?
Absolutely. Yeah, the rogue ones, well, most of the rogue ones that I've heard about have been kicked out of the clan for whatever reason. So, yeah, and there are definitely rogue ones. But so far, I haven't encountered any.
I've often wondered what happens when a rogue Sasquatch meets up with another rogue Sasquatch.
Yeah, that's a good question.
Like, do they become evil together? Or maybe they don't like each other?
Well, what does humanity do?
I think we find for like-minded people.
Yeah, I think so. And I, you know, there's no reason that wouldn't be the same with Sasquatch. Remember, they're 97% human, and that's been proven over and over again. Don't let anybody tell you that we don't have DNA of them. There are thousands of samples of DNA.
Right. I've often told people, or in discussion, that the idea of half human, half non-earthly DNA, that would be biblical. But you're saying 97%. So I could say,
yes.
I could say in Genesis 6, half mom DNA, half non of this earth father DNA. And a lot of the DNA they find for Sasquatch is that. The mom is human DNA. The dad is unknown.
Right.
Now, the percentage, could the percentage be different just by circumstance? However, unlike the Nephilim, what happened in Genesis 6, we're looking at a different mix.
Yes. Now, I get my information from a woman named Melba Ketchum. Go look her up.
I've heard good things. I like her.
Yes. Yeah. So she's, you know.
Yeah.
She's a very good source of information. She's honest, and she doesn't have any irons in that fire. You know, she's sharing what she knows. And she did that even though it lost her job, her profession, and her standing in the community. So that's a brave woman right there.
Yeah. Have you ever corresponded?
No, haven't had the chance to.
Right. I've heard that she, you know, keeps out of the limelight because of all the stones that have been thrown her way by, you know, what I might call the other side of all this.
Yes. Yep, that's true.
So I'm curious about Tinker, but I'm also curious about that other 3%. A lot of the questions I have are the mind speak, the size, the ability to elude people, maybe the ability to cloak. That all must come from that 3%, because I know, in general, we 100% humans can't do that.
Well, I have to disagree there. Back when we were first created, we had all of those capabilities. And through the years, we've lost them, or they've been taken from us. Now that's, you know, that's my standpoint. Not everybody's going to agree with that. But me, for instance, my gifting is that of a discerner. And what that means is I see and hear things other people don't. Like, for instance, I hear Tinker clearly, and my husband does not. And when he's, and you've seen me talk to him when you can't see him.
Right.
Yes, but, you know, I'm always aware when he's there. And he just popped in right now, so he's here with us.
I love that. Hello.
He said hi.
I appreciate that.
And he's, I forgot to ask him permission if I could do this.
Okay.
But he's fine with it.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I love learning about this.
So, anyway, more questions?
Yes. What if the Sasquatch clan, in general, God has a purpose for, and they have not sinned like as much as the rest of us have? So maybe their brain is unlocked for God's purpose, and therefore they can use more of it, and thus the mind speak, and so on.
Well, you know, God has a plan for every single one of us. And these are God's children. When shortly after Tinker and I met, I asked him straight out, I said, "What do you think of Jesus?" And he very quickly answered, and he said, "Jesus is my brother." So, you know, and had that not been his answer or something similar, we would not be having this conversation.
Do you think that could also translate as brother, meaning love and friendship?
Yes.
But
yeah, the same way we think of Jesus, yes.
How about Savior?
Yes.
Okay. Wow. So they have special abilities.
Yes.
How do you think that happened?
You know, that 3% that we don't know about, I think that's part of it. So let me tell you a story that happened this Christmas. Now, we've met Tinker's family, and he has a son, and until they reach their majority, we're not allowed to know their names. Oh. And this little boy he's probably 9, and we just call him Junior. And he's particularly attached to my husband. So we were ringing the bells at the Salvation Army, and this happened when you were there.
Right.
So there was a lull, and out of nowhere, this little Native American boy stepped up to Neil and looked at him very solemnly, walked up to him and said, "Can I have a hug?" And so Neil gave him a hug. And the little boy smiled at him and turned around and ran away and just disappeared. Now, you know, that. So when Neil told me that story, I sent a shout out to Tinker, and I asked him if that was Junior. And Junior popped in, and he got the cutest little look on his face. I mean, he had his hands up on his cheeks, and he was smiling. And, you know, with this just mischievous twinkle in his eye. And, yes, that was Junior. So they can shapeshift. They can literally be anything they want to be. We were up hunting, and we saw, three times we saw this, a single grouse on the side of the road. Now, anyone who know anything about hunting grouse know that it's very rare to see one alone. So I asked Tinker about it, and two of those times it was him. And he was watching out for us.
Uh-huh.
Because we encountered these people in a vehicle, and I was feeling extremely threatened by them. And we talked for just a minute and then we took off. So he's very protective.
The shape-shifting, that would explain a lot how they could stay hidden. They seem to disappear quickly. One thought I've had is they're in a different realm that is parallel to ours, and they can just step in and out of it.
Yes, they've been seen going in and out of portals.
And yet, the shape-shifting helps them, like you said, so that Junior could go to your husband for a hug and it wouldn't scare anybody, and Junior could still stay in secret, and the grouse also in secret.
Yes.
What would it take for them to show themselves as they are? Or is the way we perceive a Sasquatch to look not their original form?
Oh, no. They're easily 10 foot tall. Sometimes at their maturity, the very oldest ones reach 20 feet. But they're, and you know, they're all individuals just like we are. Some of them have a lot of hair, some don't. Some have, they all have different colored skin. Tinker's hair is very dark brown. Junior's is light brown with red streaks through it. And Tinker's wife, Avery, is blonde. And Tinker and Junior both have brown eyes, and Avery's are blue. So, you know, just like humans, they have, you know, they're different. They're all individuals. And there have been reports since ages and ages ago that they've actually interbred with humans. And so some of them look more human-like than others.
Okay. That would be a discussion. The dynamics of why that happens and how that happens.
Well, a lot of it comes from human women being kidnapped and human men being kidnapped.
To help the gene pool, perhaps?
Could be, or, you know, it could have been the bad ones, you know, looking for retribution. So humanity is a puzzle to them. You know, they don't understand why we wear clothes. Now that gives you something to think about, doesn't it?
Now they don't wear clothes, but they are covered.
Yes.
Which is very convenient for living in the woodlands. And hides private parts.
Nope, doesn't do that. When you hear stories about the males,
right,
it's all out front.
People have said she was definitely a female, or he was definitely a male. It was hanging out there.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, do you remember? About 3 years ago, there was a guy up above Foster who had his video camera out, and he was videoing the cliffs up above the lake. And all of a sudden, one of those areas where it looks like a great big ball of lava hit and lodged into the cliff face. Well, he was videoing that, and the ball opened. And inside was a cave, and he saw a being standing there. It didn't show up on the video, but in the video you see the door close again. So there had to have been something back there. And an archaeologist or an anthropologist came up the next year, and she'd heard the stories, so she wanted to see. So she found the first cave with the lava bomb in it, and so she decided to see what else she could find. She found a second one, and so she decided that she would go and talk to the First Nations people there. Now, I've lived here for years and years, and I didn't know that there were First Nation people here. But apparently there are, and so she went and she talked to them, and they were very open with her. They knew that the Sasquatch were there. They knew that they lived in the caves, and they told her that there is also a smaller being about 2 feet tall that looked very much like Sasquatch, only they wore leathers like the natives do.
Yeah.
And they're mean.
Okay.
You don't mess with them.
Little people?
Little people. And they're called Little Feet. And if you talk to the First Nations people that live up there, they can direct you to areas like there's Littlefoot Creek, Littlefoot Meadow, you know.
Oh.
All over the place up there. So, and that's not the only thing that's up there. So, there are other beings up there as well.
You mentioned 3 years ago. No, I didn't hear about this. Where was this again?
Up above Sweet Home.
Oh, okay. So tell me about these other creatures.
Well, you know, we grew up with horror movies, right?
Right.
Okay. The most popular one being the Wolfman, werewolf, you know.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Well, those are real. And they're called Wolfman or Dogman. And they've been part of the First Nation culture for years. Oh, and something that people should know is, though I'm blonde-haired and green-eyed, I'm about three-quarter First Nation from three different tribes. So, and this is something that seems to be if you're tagged, like Neil and I are, that seems to be something that's required.
Okay.
So, and I know for a fact that the dog men are there. My home is completely protected. And one day I was in the living room, and this figure started materializing in my living room, and it got enough materialized that I knew what it was, and it was a dog man. And I rebuked it in the name of the Lord and sent it packing, and then I resealed the entire property. But you know, it was an attempt, you know, to get to me.
So this is what Tinker's been protecting you from.
Absolutely. Yep, that and other things.
Okay.
And according to a friend of mine, we have a grove of fairies that live in that same area. And she has pictures.
We're still talking about Sweet Home, Oregon?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Way to go, Sweet Home. You know, I always felt a certain way when I drive through there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that and the mountains above it are very active. Very active.
I'm trying to imagine this activity in plain sight, but not being seen. That's a discussion right there. All this different concepts of going unseen and all this activity.
Right. Well, and you know, this is the thing. There's a Sasquatch research group that meets in Sweet Home. And I've been in, Neil and I've been invited to join it. But the only thing is, when you go out actively searching for them, you rarely find them.
Mm.
If they want to be found, they'll find you. And I believe years and years ago that I was tagged. I grew up in the coastal range. And there was a river. Well, actually, there were three rivers that converged below our house. And my grandfather had taken his cat and dug out a swimming pool for us. And that's where we spent our summers. And most of us that lived up there were related. So, you know, we'd all get together during the summer. And as soon as breakfast was over, you know, we'd all meet up and we'd head down to the creek. And I was the youngest. I was 4 years old and was kind of a tag along. And one particular day, I was behind further than I had ever been. The other kids weren't paying any attention. And I remember standing there watching them go down the hill. And then the next thing I remember was about 6 hours later, and they were coming back up the hill. And I don't know what happened in the interim. I was perfectly fine. I was a dirty.
You lost time.
But yeah, I did. But I didn't feel unsafe or uncomfortable or threatened or like I'd been hurt. But I kind of have a feeling that that was truly my first encounter with these people. And at that point was when I was tagged.
Yeah, sounds like it. They took you. You can't remember that 6 hour period. Did they know to take you, or did they take you and then decide that you were tagged?
Oh, I think they knew exactly what they were doing.
Was this before or after the childhood encounter you shared first?
That was before.
Before. Hmm. Okay. You came back dirty.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But, you know, that wasn't uncommon up there.
Yeah.
We were kids playing in the dirt and the trees and, you know.
Yeah.
Mom expected us to be dirty. So, but I could tell you more stories.
I'd like that.
Okay. So I want people to understand how protective these beings are once you've been tagged. Okay. So a friend of mine and I were down in Waterloo, and we had our chairs in the middle of the river, and we were cooling off. And this bunch of guys and women had floated the river and were putting in at the boat launch, and which is where we were sitting. So we moved over and let them come in. And the gentleman who was leading it at first was very pleasant. He was talking to us. And then it was like something demonic entered him. Now, this entire time, even, you know, while we were just sitting in the water, I knew the tribe was in the trees across the river from us. I could feel them watching. And so the minute that this guy changed and became, it's hard to describe, But he went from a nice guy to someone who was cussing and insulting us and saying gross, nasty things to us. And the minute that that happened, the tribe, who were invisible, moved out of the trees into the edge of the river. And if my friend and I hadn't gotten up, moved away, and went back to our cars, they would have taken care of it.
Wow.
That's how protective they are. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. About them being in the trees, I was going to ask, in what form? And you said invisible.
Yep.
Were they in the trees as themselves?
Yes.
Okay.
All shapes and sizes. And I think that, you know, they have a hierarchy. And this part is precious to me. Tinker went before the council and fought for Neil and I to become
Wow.
part of the family. And when he went away to do that, he came to me and he apologized. And, you know, it really bothered him that the tribe wasn't going to accept us, or, you know, he thought it wasn't. And part of that is because of Neil. And Neil is, he's a white guy, completely 100%. There's no Native in him, but he's my mate. And so that was important to Tinker. And they were gone for about 3 weeks. And, you know, I'm used to hearing from him weekly. And so when he came back, he popped in, and I've never seen him smile until that day. And he had the biggest smile on his face. And he came over, and while I couldn't see him, he gave me this huge hug. And since then, well, things have been peaceful.
Full acceptance.
Yeah.
To see the inner workings, a structure, a not government necessarily, but how they do things. When you said the word council, I had to start writing notes on my arm. I filled my notebook, and the back of my hand is full. a council, a way of order, a way of surviving, a way of having the structure of a society.
Yes, absolutely.
A society we cannot see.
Another thing that's interesting is that they're monogamous.
Oh, okay. One mate, one partner.
Right. And there's a new video out that I saw on the Facts by How to Hunt, and it shows a family running across a prairie. The prairie has, there's water on top of the prairie, you know, and you see both adults, and they're watching the kids. There are three children of different ages, and you know, if they were human children, the way it looked like they were skating over the water, and that was really cool. It's a neat video.
Oh.
If you have a chance.
Okay.
Go check it out.
Okay. I'll definitely be checking that out. So they frolic, they play.
Oh, They, absolutely.
They have places the young ones can play. So my hypothesis is their senses are so keen, if humans are coming, they just know that, oh, miles before you even get there.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Do you think they go underground?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
There are, our mountain up here is riddled with caves. And during the winter, that's where they live. So Tinker has sent me visuals of him out hunting in the snow with, he's got a huge buck across his shoulders, and he's headed for a cave in the mountains. And, so.
I've had a lot of thoughts about how they hide the entrance to these, and considering they're so strong, they could probably easily cover up the entrance.
Oh, yeah. Well, the two that are up and visible have lava bombs in front of them. Do you know what that is, Albert?
I don't.
Okay. What a lava bomb is, and they're actually fairly common where there's volcanic activity. It's where there's been an explosion, and some of the lava has formed itself into a ball and embedded itself into, you know, a wall somewhere. Not all of them are cave entrances, but at least two of them are.
Okay. Is it also possible that we've heard of infrasound and how that...
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, that affects behavior. Is it possible there's a guard posted to send infrasound that makes an oncoming person maybe, not Jedi mind control, but to disorient, not cloaking necessarily of the cave entrance, but to disorient the person enough to where they're not even going to notice and walk by?
Right. That's absolutely possible.
Okay.
And another thing that they do is they can send out fear.
Oh, yeah.
And so Tinker Junior is, he's a preteen, and he's mischievous, and he's learning things. And he's very often in trouble with his parents. Well, one evening, Neil and I were home, and all of a sudden, I knew something was out there, and I felt this just sense of fear. Now, I'm a hard person to scare, but this fear just settled on me. And fortunately for me, I knew what it probably was. So I went to the front door. Junior's on the front porch, and he's got this look on his face like, oh, I screwed up. And Tinker shows up, scolds him, and drags him away. It's a good thing that the neighbors can't see him.
Right.
Because that would have been shocking. But he hasn't done that again, and he came back and he apologized. But he was grounded from us for quite a while.
I have heard juveniles are quite cantankerous and joking around like that.
Oh, yeah. You know, the stories of where, you know, someone's out camping or in a cabin or something, and something comes by and hits on a door or a window or something like that, that's a juvenile.
I was thinking that may be the case. I have a friend and has rocks hit the side of the house at night. Why would an adult really do that? No.
No, they don't. It's the kids being ornery.
Yeah.
Yep. So, you know, it's been quite a journey.
Mm.
And it isn't over. You know, We were over in Prineville visiting friends about a month ago. And have you been to Prineville?
I have,
Okay.
and I know someone there, yeah.
You know how the buttes are above the city?
Yes.
Okay. We were heading back to Redmond, and I watch everything outside. And as we were coming up the last curve, there's a Sasquatch standing there, just as plain as day. Now, the pine trees up there are about 20 feet tall,
Yeah.
and he was about three quarters of that. And he just stood there and watched us. And, I could have talked myself out of it, but then he turned and walked away. And so, and Neil saw him too.
Cool.
As we were, as we got back into Tinker's territory, I reached out to him and I said, did you cause that? And he just laughed and he said, yeah.
Ah.
He said, you wanted to see one of us. So he arranged it. And he keeps telling us that we're not ready yet to see him. And Neil would absolutely love to see him.
Yeah.
He says that when we're ready, that they'll become visible. But in the meantime, it's been quite a journey.
So when you say Junior was on the front porch and looked like he had been caught, you're getting a mental image. And like you said, good thing the neighbors couldn't see it because it was quite the spectacle. So you feel this relationship when you think of Tinker in your mind, you have in your mind what his face looks like.
Absolutely.
Wow.
And as I mentioned before, he calls me his little sister.
Right. Right, in a text you told me that. Tinker especially has this bond with you, and yet there's a council, there's a community, but this clan, well, wait. Clan versus
Tribe or clan,
of
either one.
Tinker, Avery, and one child, is that a clan?
No, that's a family, and they're
Okay.
part of a clan. And, as far as having met others, I haven't. But I know that, so there's a separate clan in the Coast Range. And then there's our clan, and then there's a clan over in the Deschutes, and they're all friendly. They're all aware of Neil and I. Like when we go over to Redmond, we usually stop at the rest area up top. And the first time we did that, it hasn't happened. I mean, since meeting these beings, it hasn't happened since. But the clan in the Cascades were up there watching for us, and they have different auras as far as each clan goes. Like Tinker's clan is friendly and open. The clan in the Deschutes is very standoffish. And the clan over on the Oregon coast are full of mischief. So we have a family reunion there most years. And Neil and I went home early because I had church in the morning. And so my brothers and sisters and cousins decided they were going to walk up to the old home place. And it's a gravel road. And while they were walking, the clan was there throwing acorns at them. And what's interesting about that is there are no oak trees up there. It's all alder.
Oh, wow.
So they got the acorn somewhere, and they were throwing it at him.
I can just imagine them trading with the other groups.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. But I've heard different viewpoints. And you know, with a subject like that, you're going to hear lots of different things. But I've heard that because of mind speak and portal travel, that they all intercommunicate. But I've also heard that they don't. So I know that these particular tribes do, and I think they're probably intermarried as well. But if you can call it that. But you know, the truth of the matter is we have so much to learn about them.
Yeah. So you mentioned intermarrying. We've heard how some trips or migrating trips might be because of taking on a new partner.
Right.
Birthing and having help in doing so with other groups. They're in these other areas. They seem settled in these other areas. The idea of migrating, what would the purpose be since they seem to have a home base?
Well, I think a lot of it depends on weather. I mean, here in Oregon, sure we get snow in the winter, but it's not really dense snow. And they have the caves, and there's plenty of food, you know, plenty of water, so they've got everything they need to survive. But that's not true in other places, like up in Canada. I mean, there are times when, you know, there's 12, 14 feet of snow. And so if they don't migrate, you know, they don't have food to live off. They don't have shelter, you know, things like that. Plus, I think a lot of it also comes from not wanting to interbreed. Because, you know, they're definitely not as populous as humans. And so, you know, I think that could be a problem.
So migrating those that need to, how do these established clans in their region, how do they feel about a migrating tribe coming through?
Well, I think that depends on the tribe. You know, if they're welcoming, if they're expected, if they follow the rules, and there very definitely are rules, some of them don't welcome humans. And, you know, they just rather not have them around. And I don't think that they manage well with the tribes that do welcome us.
Interesting. You're right. There's so much for us to learn. So the Deschutes clan might be less likely to be welcoming to a migrating tribe. And yet, these others in the Cascades, the Deschutes, and the Oregon coast have a communication and portal system. And yet now I'm curious about the ones in Canada, the ones in Idaho, Montana, the rest of the world.
Yeah.
Holy smokes. Have you ever wondered to ask Tinker, how were the pyramids built?
Well, I don't have to ask him that. I know how they were built.
Okay. I believe pre-flood with ancient tech that we don't understand.
Well, so I'm very interested in archaeology. And yes, I agree, they are pre-flood. especially considering what they've discovered lately.
Yeah.
But, so there was an archaeologist who discovered this particular mineral that causes things to float, and it doesn't matter how much they weigh. And the way he discovered this, he found some on his property, and it's been known to the Egyptians since time immemorial. But he found some on his property, and he was a wealthy man who grew cotton, but nothing would grow in this field. So he took it to a university that he was affiliated with, and they tested it. And it's this white mineral. It weighs absolutely nothing. And when you put it on something natural, stone, metal, you know, whatever, it'll float in the air. Doesn't matter how much it weighs. How's that for interesting?
That is interesting. Of this planet or other?
Oh, yeah. No, it's on this planet.
We just don't know how to use it, I'd take it.
Well, it's not that we don't know how to use it. It's that most people don't know that it even exists.
Hard to find?
Yeah. And Albert, you know as well as I do that if they can lie about it to us, they do so.
Right.
Yes. But, you know, there are other options. And this is something new. You know, we've been taught that everything's gravity. Well, turns out it isn't. Everything's magnetism. And you know what happens when you put two magnets together that are opposites? They push against each other.
Right.
Think about that. I mean, that kind of blows your mind, doesn't it?
Right. People are so used to the idea, they've kind of taken it for granted, that part.
Yeah. Yeah. So there, you know, there are so many things out there that we don't know anything about.
And if we did know about them, then just like two magnets repelling each other, we just come to accept it and we call it science.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of science, the paranormal, in fact, the supernatural, the paranormal. Okay, that's another discussion. What is the paranormal versus the supernatural? But I say this, once we know something, it just becomes science that we know.
Mm-hmm. You know who Gene Roddenberry was, right?
Oh, yes. Star Trek?
Okay, yes. So before he died, he told somebody that he trusted that he had been abducted by aliens and taken off the planet. And he based Star Trek on what he saw up there.
Okay. Which means he's given us a glimpse of
the future
of what is, what could be, what is somewhere. Yeah. Wow. Okay. I've seen every episode. I'll have to watch them again now that I've heard that. Oh.
You know, we could have quite the conversation about this.
Yeah.
But that's not Sasquatch.
No. With that in mind, I was about to say how flip phones may have come from that technology of Star Trek, but
well, of course they did.
Yeah. We've heard there's technology that the government knows about before it's revealed to us. The stealth technology, stealth bomber, stealth fighter, the internet, cell phones.
Med beds. They're real.
Things they've been using, and eventually they get the information. They release the information when they want to, which is another discussion. The timing, why, who's in control. But Bigfoot, with all that in mind, there's forces, there's entities, there's fallen angel bad guys who want to be in control of something. And so Bigfoot, the origins of Bigfoot. One seer who says she has visions of heaven said that she saw creatures that resemble what we call Sasquatch up there. So a hypothesis is created by God for a purpose, and what better way to hide an army, a very smart army, ability to go through any terrain, for what purpose? Maybe the end times?
Yeah. You know, if Tinker wanted to, he could pick me up in his arms and hold me like a baby. That's how big he is.
Mm.
And I would not be in the least bit afraid. So, yeah, you know, you know, a lot of people don't believe, but they haven't experienced. And I think that that's changing. I think people like you and like Steve Isdahl and the other truthers out there, not the guys that have the Sasquatch programs. I think that's a bunch of gooey, you know, and you may disagree with me on that, and that's fine, but there's so much we don't know about him. And I think my world is better for having this family in it, and Neil does as well. I know that we've been hearing for years that there's going to be a huge earthquake off the Oregon coast, and that it's going to take out the Coast Range, and the water's going to come almost up to Lebanon. And if that happened, I know without a shadow of a doubt that I could reach out to Tinker and he'd help me. He'd take Neil and I to safety and as many of our friends as was possible. I know he would do that.
He's already shown he wants to protect you. He may reach out to you.
Yeah, that's a possibility.
And I wouldn't be surprised if his group would have the knowledge of such things coming.
Oh, I'm sure they do. Yeah, I'm sure they do.
Say, how about I start asking some questions about questions I have or questions that I have because of what we've been talking about.
Go ahead.
Okay. Do they age 1 year at a time like we do human years?
Now, that's another controversy. I've heard both. I've heard that they can live to be 1,000 years old. I've also heard that they only live to be about 100. It just depends on who you're talking to. Now, I haven't asked Tinker that.
And
that's something that I'll do. And I don't know if they even understand that thinking. But, you know, because they are, the way they think is very similar to someone with autism. And who are on the genius scale. And but I've heard both. And I think the ones that are 20 feet tall, they have to be ancient.
Oh, yeah. Now, death might come up as Tinker experiences people in the clan or his community.
Yes.
Which would be the clan. People dying. It might come up eventually. And when it does, then you'll learn how old and how the burial process happens. I have some ideas based on books, but it may come up eventually.
I've already experienced that. But the death wasn't natural.
Oh, no.
There was a young Sabe female. Who she encountered some hunters and they shot her.
Oh man.
This happened this fall.
I
felt the mourning.
Okay.
And they were angry, but they didn't retaliate. And I'm not sure why they didn't, but the mourning was, it was heartbreaking. And it was just before that Tinker went to the council. And so I know he went heartbroken.
Oh.
Because, you know, they care so much about their family. And I would think that eventually, if they catch the guy, there will be retribution.
If that guy comes back, watch out.
Right.
So I'll be watching and listening on the podcast that I listen to about someone calling and sharing about an encounter like this. And then I'll tell you, and when these encounters happen, we've heard, don't shoot, don't kill one. Because
no.
Because his buddies are going to get you. They're there.
Well,
they're not alone. They're usually not alone.
Yeah, and it isn't only that. Albert, these are people. These are people with hearts, family, civilization. I mean, lives and experience and abilities that we can't even imagine. And you know, like I said before, sure, there are bad ones, but the majority aren't. And watching them mourn over this young female, you know, I can feel their emotions. And I just, you know, I sat here and cried with them.
Have you read the book Enoch, A Bigfoot Story by Autumn Williams? Or, yeah, Autumn Williams, Amy Williams. You've read that?
Uh-uh.
Oh, you'd like it. It's about, in Florida, a man has experiences, gets to know the clan. You learn about eating habits, burial habits, emotions, love. So Enoch, A Bigfoot Story, I recommend that.
Okay, I'll look it up. And you heard that recently up in British Columbia, they found a giant tree stump. And it was probably 20 or 30 feet tall, but it had, you know, just been severed at that height. And when they went to take it down, they found a giant skeleton in it.
Oh, I had not heard that.
Yeah. Yep. I heard that on the Facts by How to Hunt.
Now,
so,
I've heard of Sasquatch burying under a young tree, and the young tree,
yes,
would grow, but inside a giant stump, you say?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. I'll look that up.
Do. Yeah, I highly recommend the Facts by How to Hunt. Once you start listening, you'll be hooked.
Okay.
So,
another question. If I had been with you and your husband in Prineville that day, less likely that Tinker would have allowed you to see a fellow Sasquatch?
Oh, no. I think he had a purpose for that. And I don't think you being with us would have been a deterrent.
Okay. Another question.
Oh, and
yes.
The Sasquatch that we saw?
Yeah.
One of Tinker's cousins. He put him up to it.
Cousins.
Yeah.
Let's see. Let's just say Sweet Home to Prineville. That's a good walk.
Yeah.
But it makes sense that the clan would extend out of Sweet Home with a large radius.
Yes.
That's so cool. Another question. We've heard, like, the Army gets involved. They do some control of the species. How does the Klan deal with humans and that relationship or that stay away from us? Another way to say it is, if you've seen a Sasquatch and you tell someone of authority, they often say, no, you saw a bear, which is ridiculous. Because if you simply say, oh, bummer, sorry, are you okay? What harm does it do to say that, knowing that most people aren't going to believe the person anyway? But instead they say, oh, no, you saw a bear, and they're kind of a jerk about it. It's
yeah,
as if,
I've heard the stories. Yeah,
it's like they know. So the government officials like park rangers, forest rangers, protecting the Klan they know about and have been told to be quiet?
Well, I think that's the directive. But I do know people who work for the Forest Service who talk openly about it, but they don't keep their jobs for very long. And I know for a fact that most of the tribes want nothing to do with the military.
Right.
And some of them have been, oh, what's a good word? Have been
captured,
coerced into helping. You know, you hear stories of people that are out in the woods and they see military helicopters, and Sasquatch are coming down the ladders from the helicopters and then taking deer and elk up to them like they've been hunting for them. So,
oh, okay.
But I don't think they do it willingly.
Okay. So if I had evidence of Bigfoot, or if someone had evidence of Sasquatch, and take it to the authorities or take it to people that can get in touch with the university or move the needle on this, it dries up. It doesn't really get there. Doesn't go anywhere. This must mean there's a protection system in place.
Well, I'm not sure that it's a protection system. I think they're afraid. I think they're afraid of this creature that has so many more abilities than they have. I mean, if you were in the military, wouldn't you be afraid of someone that could disappear, that could go through a portal, that could read your mind, that could turn into something else? Wouldn't that scare you to death?
Yes, the ultimate soldier against me.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it's more fear.
Okay. So containment, keep the population from knowing too much about it. They don't want the population to get scared or start shooting things. Just leave it alone. Tell people you saw a bear.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And they're nothing like a bear.
Right.
I mean, just having been involved with them, and you know, I grew up with bears. I mean, we had a sow and two cubs who used to come and raid our garbage can, and my dad taught the female not to take the garbage out, because if she took the garbage out, then she didn't get any food the next day. And she taught her cubs the same thing. So they are teachable, but in no way, shape, or form are they as smart as these Sasquatch people.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, and you hear about gifting.
Right.
Now, that's bad, and that's good. And most of the time, it's not recommended, because it's like It's like feeding a stray dog and then moving. You know, the food's there and then it's not.
Right. Now, if you've been tagged gifting, so do you gift to Tinker and his family?
No.
Okay.
I've only done it once. And we were out hunting and I had this really nice apple. And the reason that I did it, the area that we were in, now remember I said there are other things out there?
Right.
So the area that we were hunting, I had had a really bad feeling the entire day. And we got to this area that it was mostly grass and small shrubs, and there was a road through it. And have you ever been in the wilderness when everything goes totally silent?
Yes.
Okay. Well, there are reasons. One of them is that a Sasquatch is near, but there were no Sasquatches near. This was something else, and it felt empty. That's the only way I can describe it. And all of a sudden, I heard this extremely odd whistle, and the tone of it, instead of going down, it went up. And that, the hair on the back of my neck just stood straight up. And it was completely silent. And so we left and went into another area, and it felt completely different. And Tinker let me know that we were safe there. And so I had this big red apple, and I put it on a stump. And Junior popped in, and he had this big grin on his face, and he goes, "I get to have the apple." So we went by the next day, and it was still there. Oh. And I couldn't figure that out. And then the next day it was gone. And Junior popped in and he said, "That apple was really good. Thank you." But they never asked for more. And he understood that that was a thank you for clearing out that area. And I think that the reason the apple wasn't there or was still there on the first day was that the area still needed cleaning. So.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So tell me, does Avery talk about me much? And people don't know that story.
Avery is really reticent. She doesn't trust humans. And the only reason that she trusts me is because of Tinker and Junior. And the day that we were at Walmart, I had invited her to come because I wanted her to see the best in people. And when people come and give money and you're ringing bells, you know, there's so much joy in that. You rarely find anybody that's cranky or unhappy. And I wanted her to see that. And she only stayed for about 10 minutes. But when she left, her aura was lighter. But, you know, fortunately, she trusts me. But she doesn't want to go near Neil, you know, and Junior loves Neil. So, and Tinker trusts him.
We often hear how the alpha male is the one that's less easy to get to know, more rigid. So fascinating that the female in this family is the one that's harder to warm up to others.
Well, I don't know for certain, but I would bet you that she had a bad experience.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
And she's beautiful. I don't mean that her hair is beautiful. Her face is beautiful. If you saw her, I mean, she's stunning. Her features are beautiful. You know, she's got this gorgeous golden hair, and she doesn't have a lot of hair on her face.
Mm-hmm.
So, I think someone hurt her.
Okay.
So, and another thing, the names that we call them, that's not their tribal name. That's names that they give themselves so that we identify with. And at one point, a young female introduced herself to me. I couldn't pronounce her name. It was something like Hayakta, you know, or something like that. But yeah.
So American Indian.
Yeah.
I was stationed at Tinker Air Force Base once upon a time. So when you told me his name was Tinker, that caught my attention. That would be interesting.
Yeah.
To learn how they picked their names. How fun.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know how they do that, but they do. You know, it wasn't something we call Junior because he's, you know, he's Tinker and Avery's kid. But
yeah.
Someday when he gets old enough, you know, he'll present us with a name that he chooses. But right now, you know, he's fine with Tinker. I mean, with Junior.
That's great. You know, and it's so fun that they're good with that and they know what that means.
Yeah.
Let's briefly discuss origins. We could say we were born from a mother and a father. Well, we have the creation story. Let's talk about Sasquatch origins.
You know, your Bible.
Right.
And you know the story of the two brothers.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was Harry.
Yep. I think that's your origin.
And then that brother left. That brother loved hunting, loved being outdoors. His group, the Edomites, eventually left the area because they were different.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, some think are what the Yeti are. And then somehow the land bridge hypothesis probably enters in for coming over to North America.
Yep.
Isn't it cool? Yep. Isn't it cool how that matches biblically, but it also matches what scientists who don't want to believe in the Bible talk about that land bridge.
Yep. Yep. And they've recently discovered another one. I was just reading about it yesterday. Yeah, so that's you know, I think that's their origin because, you know, I know what the Holy Spirit feels like when he wraps his arms around me. I know that incredible feeling of love. And the only thing I've ever felt that was close to that, besides my husband, was when Tinker hugs me. And it's such an incredible feeling. You know you're safe. You know that nothing can hurt you, and you know that you are precious and treasured. And it's really hard to explain that to someone who hasn't experienced it.
Right. Wow. Well, that's a perfect place to end. However,
well, my phone's starting to die anyway.
I was wondering if mine was going to die soon. I still have a bunch of questions written on the back of my hand. I will talk to you again sometime. Definitely.
You bet. Yeah. Albert, this was a pleasure.
Oh, thank you.
So Yeah, and thank you for being patient with me. Life gets extremely busy.
No
So.
problem. No problem. Was worth the wait. I can share stories of how I almost met people in your situation and then I lost track of them. And that's why our story of meeting was so cool, because I almost lost track of you a couple times and still found you again.
Yeah.
So very good. Very good. Thank you.
Well, you are welcome. And Albert, if you don't mind me saying, God bless you.
I don't mind. Bless you.
Oh,
God bless you.
by
Yes.
the way, Tinker says goodbye.
Thank you, Tinker. Talk to you later. Bye.
Bye.